Good afternoon. This is Michael Osterlink, and I'm speaking with Stuart Davis, musician, mystic, and co-host of Sex, God, and Rock and Roll.
Hey, how's it going?
Not bad, not bad at all. How about yourself?
Very well. Having a good day, having a good winter. The sun is shining. I got oxygen and food and shelter, so I cannot complain.
Nice. Well, you also can't complain, too, because you have a new album coming out. You're hitting the road soon. And you also are co-hosting a relatively new show called Sex, God, and Rock and Roll. So where do you want to start?
Oh, boy. That does sound like a lot. I have I hope is a positive version of like short attention span. It's sort of integral pathology, which is you become interested in a great number of things. So, yeah, the last 3 years, I got into TV on top of music. Music has sort of been my day job. So maybe we'll start with the album, which I think, depending on how you count, I think it's my 15th album, and it comes out in March. It's kind of a dark record. You'll see if you go to my website, there's some images of the album cover where I'm painted black. And the record is, it's almost a counterpoint to my previous record from 3 years ago, Something Simple, which was probably my most optimistic, love-infused, a lot of light, a lot of lightness. And this record, it goes back in a different direction and spends a lot of time in caves and shadows of the human collective subconscious and conscious. And it was therapeutic. I mean, the last 2 years, for me personally, as well as I think for Western civilization culturally, a lot of shadows about. So this record is in that spirit, and the working title was Songbook of the Dead, and I think the release is going to come out, the title that will be released under is Music for Mortals.
Nice. All right, so let's put on our capitalist hat because we definitely want you to sell a whole bunch of albums. When's the date of its release, and how can folks buy it?
The street date is March 13th, and they can buy it immediately. In fact, I think you'll be able to buy it on iTunes before the street date. But for sure on iTunes in March, and then you can buy physical copies. People, if you're still interested in a physical CD, I may even make records, actually, LPs. You can get them at shows or through my website, Amazon, places like that. You know, the days of distribution and retail outlets, like back when there was record stores, you know, there still are, obviously, there's Walmart, there's Target and stuff. But to be honest, I've kind of drifted away from from putting the physical stuff in the center. The truth is there's just most people buy digital now, at least for my stuff. And so we still print a few thousand physical copies, you know, maybe 5,000 physical copies, but that's kind of become a boutique thing. And I'm fine with that, actually. So my website or iTunes is where you should go.
For those who are not psychic, what's your website?
StuartDavis.com, and you will be psychic after you go to that website. That's why.
Nice, and I've taken a look at the picture you have on your new album. I see that you're learning to swim.
At least
you won't drown if they throw you in a tub.
That's a cosmic goggles that I'm wearing there, by the way. They're they look into the ocean of interiors out there in the cosmos. So, yeah, those
nice.
Are cool goggles.
All right, well, since I introduced you as a musician and mystic, I think we should step back. You talked about the light of your more recent album before the new one, Something Simple, and the darkness of your upcoming album. Tell us about what kind of drives you in terms of expressing yourself through music on a both personal and kind of transpersonal way.
That's a good question. My career has been somewhat anomalous and unusual in that there's this tandem action between my spirituality and art. And I never get one without the other. And sometimes it's contentious. You know, it's difficult, challenging. It's a challenge that I love. to try to make pop music that's mystically inclined, spiritually oriented, without being new age, without being cheesy, without being fundamentalist, and then trying to find a home in the mainstream music world of Hollywood or New York or wherever you want to think of it. So, I mean, I have a peculiar constitution in that I'm very attracted to that and I love it. It's a natural extension of my own inner spiritual life. As soon as I became inwardly focused spiritually, I was also activated artistically. So it goes back to my teenage years. And for whatever reason, I mean, personally, I have my theories about it. I think that art was the very first mystical path, the very first spiritual lineage. And I think that it will be, this is pure speculation, but I think it will be around after conventional religion vanishes. So it has that kind of truly long enduring human legacy to it. And it also has the privilege and convenience of getting to circumvent a lot of the traps and trappings of conventional religion, which is just to say, sometimes you can reach people with a song in ways that they wouldn't be open to if you were in a cathedral or a temple or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, it's a strange combination, but there's no reason, there's no use for me to fight it. It's just when I make music, there's a spiritual component, and when I'm engaging my spiritual practice, there's a musical component, and I'm more at peace with that in the last 5 or 10 years than I was probably in the first half of my career.
Well, one of the things that's amazing to me about you is how you kind of integrate the sacred and profane. You're the only person I know who could sing about hookers and blow and God in a very meaningful way in the same song.
Well, Ed, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Sure.
You know, I think in my, like I was saying, in the first half of my career, I think I was probably more fascinated with, not always in a bad way, but what triggers people. You know, I was very magnetized toward the places where we were stuck and what would cause a reaction in myself and in other people. So I spent a good decade at least triggering, you know, the traps and just going through and sort of flicking those buttons and switches and levers in people and myself. And then gradually that yielded to something deeper and still genuine, which is how to find God or reality or whatever you want to think of it, absolute reality or awakened presence. Whatever is this mystery that's back behind everything and inside of everything and in front of everything. I became really interested in how to find that in places where it would seem most difficult or most off-putting. So, yeah, hookers, blow, drugs, rock and roll. And then I also realized in that the rock and roll is really kind of a perfect lineage for a mystic because it's very tantric. It will either incinerate you and send you spiraling into cosmic delusion, or it will test you in all the places you're caught and all of your shortcomings and shadows, and it will test you until you can move through those places. So it was an interesting thing. I kind of found a kinship between Tantra and Zen Buddhism and rock and roll because they have that in common. At least the better parts of rock and roll and the better parts of show business are really about knowing that this is a play. You know, that there's a theater and there's an orchestration that is enacted in the cosmos that we mirror in spiritual practice and in show business. And if you're able to hold on to that perspective, it can become really powerfully transformative and awakening. And it's appealing to someone like me. I have a lot of trouble with institutions and organizations and groups and conventions. And so, although I value them all very much, rock and roll is a good place because it's kind of like, it's a lot of cats, you know, it's like herding cats. Sort of everyone's doing their own thing, but there is a lineage to it. So you get both, the best of both worlds.
Well, it sounds like it's very liberating for you, which is fantastic. And I'm wondering, since I have you on the E-Couch, and I'm speaking with Stuart Davis, the musician, mystic, and co-host of Sex, God, and Rock and Roll, you mentioned tests, that you've been tested. And I'm wondering if you'd be willing to share for the benefit of our listeners who might be facing some of the same demons and shadows, some of the tests you've experienced, explored, and perhaps moved through and transformed to better yourself and be more expansive in your own life and liberate yourself, basically, from them.
Certainly. I've been tested, but I think just as often or more often I test myself. And there, you know, I think that rock and roll is just, or show business probably more generally, because the TV world and all that I'm in is a part of it. It's a condensed version of samsara, or a condensed version of the human condition. And so there's nothing that you find in my world of work or play that you wouldn't find if, you know, you're an accountant, or if you're a school teacher, or whatever, a professional athlete. Just if you're a human being, this is the stuff you butt up against. But if you're in show business, you run into it more often and more potent doses usually. So, you know, you can start with some of the most obvious ones. Sexually, I've gone through every facet, and trust me, I don't think I'm done with any of these challenges. I'm not saying that I've transcended all this stuff, but to begin the list, sexually, you know, like in the beginning of my music career, I was on the road for 10 years. I did 1,000 shows in a decade, and I went all over the U.S. and Europe, and I didn't have a boss, and I didn't have to answer to anybody, and I was single and free to do whatever I wanted with whoever I wanted, however I wanted. And so you try everything. You know, you try indulging sexuality as much as you humanly can, and you personally, I exhausted myself that way, and engaging all the shadow components of that and finding out what it feels like to stick your hand in the real dark part of your own anatomy internally and spiritually and physically as well. And then you try the other end of the spectrum, which is like renunciation and radical purity. And I'm a real black and white person, and it's, sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad, but sexually it's definitely feeling the tension between those two opposites. And so you need to, or you don't need to, maybe not for everybody, but for me it was like I couldn't learn things academically. I had to experience them. I couldn't be satisfied with cognitive lessons, and so I went through trying everything experientially. And so sexually, at the end of that decade, I got to a point where I was just heartbroken and lonely and like very, very depressed. And strangely so, I mean, it was really instructive, because what had happened was I could do anything I wanted, however I wanted, with anyone I wanted. I had complete sexual freedom and basically was in the candy shop of sexuality, which is rock and roll. So it's everywhere. It's, you know, everywhere you go, it's on. That party is there and available. And at the end of that decade, I became celibate, strangely, because I was finding that I was just depleted in some very fundamental way, and I felt like I needed to heal, and unless I stopped everything, I was not going to be able to heal and kind of ground myself. So ironically, having access to everything brought me to a point where I just walked away from it all. And then I spent about 5-6 months where I was celibate, and then I had met my wife, but then I fell in love with my wife and got married and went off into a completely different sexual reality, which is monogamy and an intimate relationship with a family and all that, which proved to be about 10 times more challenging than the total sexual liberation. I mean, it's much more tantric, actually. There's much more intense tantra in that than there was in, you know, the hedonistic, quote-unquote, freewheeling circus life. So that's the first one that I would list, you know, in the way that I've tested myself or been tested. The sexual one is a big one. There's been tons of addiction in my life with chemicals and drugs, and also their substitutes and their equivalents. So like whether it's drugs or it's health food or exercise or the renunciation of all those things, I do the same thing in any of those realms, you know, and that 0 to 11 kind of thing, you know, and my own disposition is one of the biggest tests. So it's
You actually have a song about addiction and replacing one addiction for another.
Yes, I do. It was kind of my first little indie hit was this song called Only Changing Drugs, which, God, if I'd only known how true that was going to be in 1994 when that song came out, you know, it was, I think I went through treatment for the first time around 1992, maybe. So that was a funny song because it pissed off everyone in AA. I'd gone through AA and treatment, and then I wrote that song, and it kind of became a tiny hit in the Midwest, and it really it sort of polarized people's reactions. I got a lot of negative from it. And so, yeah, I mean, tested all the time and still very much so. I mean, I think the test that I'm acquainting myself with on the new album and on this season of the TV show to some extent too is making peace with the fact that it's never going to stop. You know, like making peace with the faults and the limits and the imperfections, like fundamental imperfections of feeling like, okay, I'm 20 years into my spiritual practice of meditation. I'm 20 years into the esoteric spirituality. And I do feel like there's been development and evolution, but I don't necessarily feel any less messed up than I did 20 years ago. You know, there's really something to be said for the test of your own humanity and realizing there is no escape from the deep, almost, you know, the blessing and the curse of our humanity is this terrible mess that is the frontal structure of having a discrete, individuated self. That will never be fixed. And so I think the short way of saying that is that I wake up and I'm still Stuart Davis every morning, you know, and sometimes that's awesome. Sometimes it is so nauseating, you know, and
for you and your wife
right now. Oh, my wife could tell you books. She could write books, and boy, am I lucky she hasn't.
Right, right.
So yeah,
well,
it's a test of being of the human condition.
Right. Well, it reminds me of a talk I heard from Ram Dass years ago, and he talked about, you know, all the LSD he used and meditation and et cetera, et cetera. And it was like his neurosis got slightly a bit smaller, but never went away. And I think you're right that what you're speaking to is just the general human condition, and that we're never going to get ultimately away from the pain and suffering. It's in the nature of being alive and being human.
Especially
the pain and suffering.
Exactly. And you brought up the tests, you know, and I think that the sex and the drugs and the rock and roll and those tests, they were almost, they're tiny little subsidiaries, you know, they're little encapsulations of this bigger test, which is like, I became a human being. And now, 20 years ago, I was an asshole, and I meditated for 20 years, and I'm going to keep practicing, but I'm still an asshole, and I guess that kind of shocks me sometimes, you know, and then I realize that that's going to be the case, and I hope I can change that. I believe every bit as much as I ever have that transformation is real, and evolution is real, and development is real. It needs to be cultivated, but also making peace with that fact, which is like, wow, you know, I still do the clumsiest, most ridiculous things that hurt other people. And it's the test of not caving into that disappointment, you know, like not giving up, knowing that it's never going to be perfected, and then learning that you can celebrate that and still go forth with great exuberance into the human condition, knowing that.
Well, you still have hope. Keeping hope alive.
I do. I think there's really something to be said for that. You know, there's a thing with Zen, which is my central practice and has been for a long time. That's kind of my home spiritually, aside from art. And there's this death of hope that occurs at some point in the Zen practice, you know, where they'd strip you of everything That's the thing that really appealed to me about Zen was there's no place to hide. It just strips away everything, and then you come out on the other side of that, and then you find a different kind of hope and a different kind of exuberance in life and vitality, and one that I think is more enduring. You know, the hope that trusts just in the mystery and the great ineffable unknowable, but that's also alive in every moment as a very real presence. And humor is huge to me in that. I mean, humor and laughing, that's the reason I want to make a comedy on television. That's the reason that I'm so interested in comedy, is that the laughter and the surprise of how ridiculous this whole situation is really what has kept me alive many, many times. If I couldn't have laughed,
that's actually a great
I don't think I would have made it.
You are the co-host of Sex, God, and Rock and Roll, which is an expression of your humor and your recognition of both the sacred and profane in the human condition. And obviously I'm really glad that you made it, because then we wouldn't be having this conversation. I wouldn't spend all these years enjoying your music. Tell us a little bit about Sex, God, and Rock and Roll.
Well, it's a TV show that it's exactly what you said. You know, it's the sacred and the profane brought together in a kind of synergy. My favorite synergy of all. To me, it's just personally, as a fan of humor, that's always produced the greatest laughs for me. My favorite comedians are naturally inclined toward that, whether it's George Carlin or Bill Hicks or Chris Rock, or I could make a list as long as my arm, but they all have that underpinning in there somewhere, which is a real gravitation toward the light and the dark. And so this TV show is an experiment, and I know that you have an integrally inclined consciousness in life, and the way that Ken Wilber in the world of Integral has influenced me in part is my interest in trying to make mainstream entertainment that's informed by that stuff. So we said, let's try making a television series from right out of the Integral community that is about this kind of sense of humor. It's deeper, but also wider. It's dirtier, but it's also got more light to it. And that tone has informed the show from day one. So there's a lot of really dirty stuff. I mean, it's like if you're into South Park or you're into The Simpsons or whatever, like kind of real gritty comedy, it will probably appeal to you in some parts. And then also, if you're into, you know, any of the esoteric mystical traditions of the world, it may very well appeal to you equally. You know, this is much about Ramana Maharshi as it is about the base sexuality of every person born. I don't think those are at all incompatible. In fact, I think that they're two sides of the same coin. You know, it's that kind of all opposites. It's an illusion. That opposition. So we've been making it for two seasons now. Season two is on the air as we speak, and it's still alive. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm shocked and surprised and really gratified that the show got made at all. And the fact that we got to make season two was a miracle to me. And I'll keep making it as long as they let me. I have no idea how long that's going to be. This might be our last season, or it could go on for 10 more seasons. I have no idea.
Well, how does this work? Is it on a cable network, a satellite network? How can people find it?
It's on a cable television network, which is called HDNet. And if you have cable TV, kind of basic cable in North America, so we're on in the U.S. and Canada, and it's on in 25 million homes, so it's a subscription thing. I think you have to pick it in most places. So it's like Showtime or HBO. I think you have to order it. I don't personally have television anymore. I did back when we made season one, but now I'm kind of a Netflix computer kind of stuff. If you don't have cable television, you can buy the DVDs or you can watch it on Amazon, and it's going to be on iTunes soon as well.
Nice. And you mentioned a DVD. I'm actually holding season one in my hand. If folks want to check season one out in terms of purchasing it through your website, what would your website be?
SexGodRockAndRoll.com. And there's no commas or anything. It's just all one word, SexGodRockAndRoll.com.
And who's your co-host?
My co-host is Candace McClure. You know, if you're into Battlestar Galactica, I am a huge fan of that show and loved it. She played Anastasia Duala on 5 seasons of that show. And then that ended, and she's done a lot of films, a lot of television in Canada and the U.S. And it was really cool because people didn't know, you know, that Battlestar Galactica is kind of a sacrosanct sci-fi show. Very, very passionate fan base, very intense supporters. But people, you wouldn't know watching it that she has a great sense of humor and a great comedic timing. So when she came over and did this show, it was pretty funny because she's very funny. She's got a great sense of comedy, and it's cool to see her branching out into that world as well.
That's awesome. Well, I also want you to talk about your upcoming shows, but before I do, I'd be remiss not to tell you, because I don't know if you know this, but we actually played one of my favorite songs of yours at our wedding.
I just saw
Nothing
your tweet.
In Between. Yeah,
oh,
I tweeted
that
out before
so
the show.
Cool.
I wasn't sure if you actually saw that. But
I just saw
very
that, so when
song
did you get married?
I love that song, Nothing in Between. I encourage, of course, everyone to listen to all your music. But that and Ladder happens to be two of my favorite songs of yours. So thanks for joining us at our wedding a few years back.
I'm totally flattered.
Tell us about your upcoming show, Stuart.
Let's see. Well, first of all, to get the up-to-date tour schedule, you can go to stuartdavis.com, and it's on the landing page there. And then also you can sign up for my mass email list. So there's a little thing there. You enter your email in, and then we'll send you once a month or so. We send out notices about my tour schedule and everything. But I'm going all over the place. I'm going to some new towns this year. Pretty much if it's a big city, I'll be in it or close to it. So everywhere from Seattle, L.A., Minneapolis, Chicago, New York, obviously, Boston, Philadelphia. I'm going to Nashville for the first time ever this year. It's kind of a big thing because I'm sort of, no offense, but I've been, you know, I haven't been to the South for any time ever in my career. I've never toured below the Mason-Dixon line, which seems a little weird and vaguely, I don't know, paranoid or something, but I'm going to Nashville, so I'm breaking that this year, and that feels good. And I have like 20 shows scheduled, and they're all pretty much big cities, so I'm going to try to hit every single, you know, top 25 or 30 big cities in America this year.
Fantastic. Well, wish you much luck and success on your tour, on your new album, and on your television show.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Stuart, it's been great talking to you. And one last thing. You've already mentioned your website, so great going over through them one more time, both your personal site and XTX God and Rock and Roll site, but also your Twitter fans. How can people follow you on Twitter?
Oh, it's super easy. It's just at Stuart Davis, so StuartDavis. Same as the dead painter, but I got that Twitter. So if you follow Stuart Davis on Twitter, it's me. It's not the dead painter. He doesn't tweet, and he's never going to.
Cool. Well, this is Michael Osterlink, and I've been talking to Stuart Davis, musician, mystic, and co-host of Sex, God, and Rock and Roll. Thanks, Stuart.
Hey, thanks, Michael.